The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Pat Kenny here. Before we get to today's podcast, I wanted to offer you my sincere thanks for your loyalty and your company over the past 12 years plus of mornings on News Talk. But fear not, I hope you'll be able to join me on weekend mornings from 10 a.m. starting in March. Now, we're really excited about the evolution of the show, which you can continue to follow on this podcast feed. So rest easy, you don't have to change a thing. But until we meet again this spring, I've delved into the archives to bring you some of the most engaging and thought-provoking pieces that I've had the pleasure to bring you over these past dozen years. So make sure you continue to follow The Pat Kenny Show on the Go Loud app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you very much for having me, Pat.
You're delighted, I'm sure, that your life in Game of Thrones is over.
Oh, no, my accountant's very disappointed. No, it was a gorgeous, gorgeous thing to be involved in. And obviously it raised my profile enormously because it wasn't just a show, it was a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
You know, so to be part of that and some of the best, if not the best writing I've ever come across, it's what an actor dreams of.
But it follows you around, I suspect.
No, it'll be on my gravestone. I've known. But it's not a bad thing to have on a gravestone.
Yeah. But I mean, how do people, when they see you and they do a double take?
Oh yeah, there's lots of double takes. And that's the wonderful thing. Actors can continue working a lot because the public's memory is so short. So I always said to myself I'd give it up if I couldn't walk the streets of Dublin. I live here and I love the place. And if it ever became difficult to get up Grafton Street or Henry Street, then I would consider not doing it because I'd kind of cherish my anonymity a bit.
People therefore recognise you and studiously ignore you? Do you the favour?
Oh no, it's great. It's great. I've said it before. There's a healthy begrudgery in this place. You're not allowed to get ahead of yourself, and I have a lot of respect for that. You don't get too many people bowing in front of you here.
Yeah.
And it's kind of healthy. Yeah, you're not allowed to get ahead of yourself, and I like that.
Mm. Where's your bleeding throne now?
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, there is a bit of that.
Now, you have a new series which is coming to us on Netflix in March.
Yes.
It was a bit delayed because?
Various lockdowns, actor strikes, all that sort of stuff, and not been able to do promotion. And I think the producers were probably quite happy. It gave them a bit more time to do their polishing and get it, get all the post-production stuff right.
Yeah. You can tell us a bit about the scenario, but I looked at the title, Three Body Problems, and is it three body problems like migraine, indigestion and acne? Or is it three different bodies? What's it about?
Well, it's all to do with theoretical physics.
Oh, dear. Yeah. I should know about
it. Are you
this.
Gripped? Are you gripped already? Three Body Problem is a theoretical physics kind of anomaly. If you've got three, we've one sun, we go around it.
Yeah.
Three Body Problem is an unpredictable path of three gravitational, but here's what it has to do with. What's exciting about it, it's the first show that the creators of Game of Thrones have done since Game of Thrones.
And that's a high bar for them to exceed.
Oh, you can imagine there's a few eyeballs on this show.
Yeah.
And it is alien invasion. So basically what we have is an alien civilization who are putting up with a three-body problem and their civilization keeps getting destroyed.
And what's your part? What are you in this? Are you an alien?
I am not. I'm in charge of saving the world.
That's your simple task?
Yeah. Yeah, handy number.
Save the world. But what are you, a physicist yourself?
Or? No, he's not. He's a bit of a shadowy character. There was a line, I don't know if it makes it into the finished article, but there is a line in the show where somebody says to me, when I'm trying to recruit them, they say, do you work for MI5? And I say, no, they work for me.
That's a great line.
And he's not lying. So basically we follow several very clever kind of Oxbridge scientists They keep getting people, physicists around the world start committing suicide and start all sorts of things start going wrong. And the aliens are up to no good. But it's the scope on this thing. I mean, you saw the scope of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
The scope on this is, and the blurb is, that we start in modern day, just, you know, present time.
Yeah.
And the series goes until the end of time. So there's a bit of a stretch.
You could be working for quite a while on this thing.
Please God, the accountant would be delighted.
Talked to Luke earlier of the Swing Cats about having great promise as a musician, thought he'd be a big star, and then he went to the day job, but back in showbiz now.
Yeah.
How did you end up permanently being an actor? Because it's the most precarious of professions.
Oh, it's not. It's not. I can't even tell you what my dad said when I told him I was giving up the grand job in the ESB and said I'm going off to be an actor. It's too early in the morning to tell you. It's like when people come up to me and go, can you tell me I want to be an actor? And I said, you've just said the exact reason why you shouldn't be. And I'm sure it's the same with the music. You do it because there's just something in you that just says, I have to do it. There's so much rejection. There's so much, you'll never make it. There's so much negativity about it. That it's the process. I love the process. You know, the bit, the rehearsing of the bit between action and cut. Everything else is kind of, it's a bit nasty in the business. I don't really like it.
I mean, you had in your youth, I'm sure, the cattle calls where you're auditioning.
Oh yeah. If you could get into a cattle call, you were blessed. And I didn't start doing this until I was 29. I was kind of married 5 or 6 years. I had to mortgage the whole thing, nearly lost the house when taxman chasing me and all sorts of stuff. It was fairly stressful when you've maxed out the credit card, the overdraft, everything else, and there's nothing coming in the next month. You've got to really like it.
That taxman is chasing now. Give me more.
He loves me, the taxman, yeah. I think I'm funding the children's hospital by myself.
Now, the business of getting the breakthrough, what was the big break, do you think? Because now your agent, I presume, doesn't even have to put you up for things. They come to your agent and say, would Liam possibly be free?
There is a bit of that, yeah. But that brings its downside as well. You can be walking into something where, you know, I want to know who I'm going to be dealing with.
Yeah.
And you do get offers, and I'm fairly reticent about them because it worries me more that they want to employ me without having met me as well. I'd much rather sit down and see if I'm going to get on with somebody, you know, and see if you're happy to collaborate with them. And also, you don't want to be appearing the first day on set and after your first take, look around and the entire crew are looking going, who the hell hired this guy?
Yeah.
So you want to try and get those things out of the way and you know, formulate a team before you start.
So that turning point where they came looking for you rather than you kind of begging through your agent for a part.
Yeah. There was a little bit on the smaller stuff before Game of Thrones, but when something like that hits, you're regarded as a possible prophet because of the success of it.
You're bankable.
And people know you. There's a bit of bankable. A little bit. It's not huge. And the trick is not to just go for the stuff that has the zeros on the check and try and filter out. And you end up, generally speaking, the best stuff pays the least because they know that people want to do it because it's a beautiful script or whatever it may be.
Game of Thrones, a happy set?
Oh, incredible. There was absolutely something magical about it. It was brilliantly cast by a wonderful woman called Nina Golden. And the producers were just wonderful. And the people that ran it, the showrunners, were the guys who created it from the books. And they had the final say. So they were artistically taking care of the quality of it. And it was a joy to do, especially for a thing that size. That it felt like family, you know. A lot of us still keep in touch.
Now, I don't know how much research the cast would do, or you as an actor would do.
Yeah.
I mean, in this current thing about quantum physics or whatever it is, I mean, do you just sort of look at the script and deliver, I don't think the xenon gun is working today. the energy coils have malfunctioned.
Now you look into it a bit because you might have to explain it down the line and you don't want to appear like a complete idiot. But the theoretical physics thing is incredibly interesting. I mean, just give you a small example. There's a thing called quantum entanglement, which is tricky to explain. However, Einstein said his quote about quantum entanglement was, it's spooky.
Einstein said that.
Einstein said it about quantum entanglement, which is something that happens faster than the speed of light and affects two protons and all sorts of stuff. And that's kind of, that's a big part of the show as well. But it's a thriller. It's, you know, the aliens are on the way. It's that kind of stuff, you know.
Now, we'll change tack now because you mentioned the aliens are on the way. There are people in this country who object to what they regard as aliens coming in here, that they're transforming Dublin. And we saw what a small group of people did to mobilise a greater population.
Yeah.
I am dispirited about that.
It's 100%. Listen, I'll tell you what it is. And it goes back to when you were talking about when I started off. When I started off, I was a biker when I was 19, 20, motorbike. I'm back on the bike again now. It's not even a midlife crisis. It's an old age crisis at this stage.
It's trying to get around.
There is a bit of that. And I remember when I was in a motorcycle club, the RDMCC, the Rohanian District Motorcycle Club. And when we went out on our bikes, you couldn't get into a pub. Yeah, anybody, biker's not allowed all over the place because they thought we were Hell's Angels because the Hell's Angels were big at the time. Yeah. These were fellas working in the ESB. There was accountants beside me, plumbers and businessmen and all that. But they wouldn't let you into the pub because they considered you a thug of some description.
Yeah, but why did you have death to all publicans on your T-shirt?
Yeah, that probably didn't help. And it's, you know what it is? It's very simple. Psychologically, it's the easily identifiable minority and somewhere to point their anger at. This does not excuse what these people did and the thuggery that went on. The other aspect of it is, I personally think, I'm not usually one for defending bad behaviour or whatever. But I saw the Commissioner Drew Harris having to defend the actions. Now, at the end, there's several young people here now, but do you remember the flash mobs?
Yeah.
In the early days of social, when Facebook started kicking off and people would show up at train stations and start dancing, and where the hell did this crowd come from? And it used to be called the flash mob.
By and large.
Oh, it was absolutely joyful. And what you had was the equivalent of a flash mob on this that were brought on by social media, you know, with various people saying, get down here, it's all kicking off and all that. And Rory Hearn said it very good. When you've got a disaffected youth, they're looking for any chance to explode their anger. And in some cases, as we saw, that involved the lunacy of breaking into shops and all that sort of stuff. And there wasn't a thuggish element. But what I'm saying about the commissioner is, I mean, it's very difficult to respond quickly to something like this, in inverted commas.
As you say, a flash mob. Yeah.
You can't have 300 cops sitting in in the station in riot gear and a fella at the wheel of a water cannon waiting on the next riot. I have a certain amount of sympathy for what the guards went through. Mm. I felt incredibly sorry for them.
Yeah.
But the other aspect of it is the average prices of accommodation in Dublin, the incredible statistic that a starting off pay for a teacher, the average price of accommodation in Dublin is 105%. It's more than all the money a teacher can earn just to get accommodation in Dublin. And there's 800 primary school positions that they can't fill. We don't have enough people to teach our kids because they can't afford to be teachers.
And we know that what happens in the classroom
is broken, Pat.
That's the point. What happens in the classroom is hugely influential.
100%.
The way they turn out.
100%. It's education. It's teaching people community and get on with their, you know, and if you're going to have 50, 60, 70 kids to a class, you're not going to be able to pay the attention. And so the social contract, this does not excuse the behaviour. But as the fellow said, it may explain to some extent that when you break the social contract, there's a payment for it.
So explain, but not excuse. That'd be the line. Now, I know you've been very outspoken on what is happening in Gaza,
yes.
And not just from October the 7th, but going back,
yes,
that massive injustice that was done to the Palestinians originally by the British,
yes,
their decision.
Yeah, but a letter to Lord Rothschild, a banker.
Samuel, yeah, there's a little video going around showing a kind of a modern parallel. If you had someone living in a semi-D in Drumcondra or whatever, and suddenly there's a knock on the door.
Yeah,
get out of your house.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there is, most definitely. And you know, the funny thing is, you were talking about the Game of Thrones thing. I've been on the marches for probably 40 years, but no one ever noticed me until I started showing up on the telly. Yeah. I'm not a fan of injustice. I did the marches for South Africa against apartheid. I did marches in several places around the world during the Iraq War, the precursor to the Iraq War, did not go. And I'm on the marches here, and in the previous ones, as with a lot of people, we were proved right. It was wrong. The UN have been, you know, calling for an end to the occupation, an end to this behaviour that the Israelis are doing. And I find it completely heartbreaking, especially coming from a country, 700 years of an occupation. And if you don't have sympathy for what the Palestinian people are going through, I don't know what to say to you.
I mean, they became dispossessed. They were literally shunted out of their homes. And, you know, there's the parallel sympathy for the Jewish people who were hunted out of their...
Quite rightly, sympathy
for the
Jewish
people.
You know,
right throughout Europe in history, the pogroms that dispossessed Jewish people, finally... You know, people from Eastern Europe go to the Middle East where they have historical roots, but no experience.
Correct.
And they're not even mindful, probably, of the people they're dispossessing.
Well, even if you believe that you have historical right to that, do the Palestinians not have a historical right as well? I mean, surely this is
why it's so intractable.
It's unbelievable, and it has to. I mean, the only listen, I've been, you know, on these marches, wearing a scarf the whole lot. It has to come down to a two-state solution, which is the official line of the Israeli government, the official line of America, the official line of the EU, and nobody's doing anything about it. And as long as nobody forces Israel to respect their own policy, then this is going to be repeated and repeated ad nauseum. It has to. The Israelis we know the Israelis are not going to do it. It has to come from international pressure. Just for justice, for absolute justice for the Palestinian people, and they deserve it.
Yeah. When we look at the destruction now of Gaza, I mean, there's such a rebuilding job to be done there.
Yes.
I don't know who's going to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, the response by the Israelis was to lay waste much of Gaza City and so on.
Yeah.
And that's got
Hannibal
to be
Directive, I think it's they refer to.
The,
it,
you know, if there's any kind of a silver lining to the cloud, is that there'll be lots of work to be done to rebuild that country. But unless you have a stable political situation in the country, it'll just happen again.
Yes. And as well as that, there's allegedly $500 billion in gas right under Gaza. They have huge, allegedly, huge reserves of gas that could pay for it. But the only way to do it is for the Israelis to allow, which they shouldn't have the right to, of self-determination for these downtrodden people.
On that note, Liam Cunningham, thank you very much for coming to The Marker.
Thank you, Pat.
And Antara The Marker to be with us this morning. Liam Cunningham. Now let's